طفلة تمتطي قوس قزح.
Welcome to This Week in Palestine on WZBC 90.3 FM Newton, a weekly show hosted for many years by our beloved Sharif Pham and continued in his loving memory by a group of his dedicated friends. I'm your host, Thesmina Muzuris. On today's show, we will be speaking with photographer and activist Ahmed Mesle, also known as the Eye of Palestine from Nilin, the occupied West Bank. Ahmed grew up in a family of seven children, five boys and two girls. His parents are both teachers, and the first 13 years of his life were spent in Saudi Arabia. However, Ahmed always dreamed of going back to Palestine to help his people. His dream was realized in 1999 when he and his family returned to their hometown. As a youth, his social consciousness was shaped by the Second Intifada. During this period of the Palestinian struggle for freedom, he volunteered with the Palestinian Relief Medical Committees and ran three summer camps for youths, among other tasks. In 2003, he also attended Al-Najah University, majoring in computer sciences. After a few years of working in the sector, he was introduced in August of 2009 to the passion of his life, photography, when a friend from Canada gave him the gift of a camera. Since then, Ahmed has dedicated his life to capturing Palestine through the lens of his camera. You can view his spectacular photographs and a documentary about his life and work by visiting his personal website at www.eyeonpalestine.com. Welcome, Ahmed, to our show.
Welcome, and good morning for all the listeners.
Thank you. I'd like to start our conversation today by asking you how photography became so important in your life. What was it about photography that captured your imagination?
I didn't know that like I have a passion in photography. Like when I was young, I knew that like I'd like to draw, but I could not because I didn't have the passion. Because my older brother, like he was a doctor and he knows how to write and how to draw things, and all the time I'm looking to his drawing. And after I finished my university degree in computer engineering, I found like when I get the gift from my friends that I can do something different with the camera because it's like a pen, you can write with it, it's like you can draw also because you can make the composition of everything you want in the pictures. So I found like in photography, first of all, to express myself, I can talk to the people without words. I can, by pixels, display if I'm talking about the technical stuff, I'm talking about a human message to all the people around the world because, you know, you just take some photos here and there and you just put it around in the internet and people, like, can get the message directly without writing any words. And the second point, it's a message from my nation. It's a second message from the people who cannot talk, who cannot shout by their voices, like the Palestinian prisoners, and the Palestinians, like, who, like, the occupation stole their lands, and the people who, like, lost their beloved people around Palestine or even outside, like, visiting the camps, the Palestinian refugees camps, Jordan or Lebanon, when, I visited before. So this is the second thing, important thing for me, because you can express what's going on inside these people, what they want to talk and they cannot. So some people are like having more creativity in talking instead of these people and to give a message all around the world.
I understand. When you take your photographs, what do you look for? Do you look for something specifically, or is it something when you see it, you then take the photograph?
My life, like when I was a child, my mother all the time said, like, you all the time look for the details and stuff. And you ask a lot of questions. And that's reflected even in my study because I was like working 2 years as a technical analyst. So I was I used to write the reports and write every small details. I was like so accurate in my writing. And that's reflected in my photography. So when I go outside to take pictures, I look all the time for the specific details, like the accurate things. And I have thanks for God for my good memory, because when I meet some people, like for 2 years, I remember the first time I met them what were they are dressing. And this is a good thing because sometimes, you know, it's the small details and not like, you know, different like others who cannot do this. And that's helped you like to remember these things in the future, and you're like a history teacher, because you remember every picture you took, the date and the time and the place and what special things happened, the emotions also. So when I go outside to take a picture, I look for special moments, like things that not easy to be captured like by other photographers. It's not like public photos, like someone stand and click the camera, take the picture, and post it around. No, I'm looking for the moments that it's hard to be repeated. It's hard to repeat it again, and people like, oh, I'm gonna go again and take this picture. So I used to say all the time, as people said about photographers, like the right time in the right place, and this is what I'm trying all the time to do. To take a special photos and give it in my legacy.
Can you describe for us what a typical day is like for a Palestinian photographer? Like, how do you prepare yourself to go out into the field or the town or to attend the protest and take the photographs?
The Palestinian photographers have maybe a special day. First of all, before one day, in the night, we look in the internet for any occasions happening the next day, any events, the protest against occupation or apartheid walls or settlements around the West Bank held most of the time on Friday. So before then, in the other days, what we do is to read the news, we see the image events around like Facebook. It's a good a tool to know all the what's going on around. My friends have a page called Events in Palestine, and this page is important because we need everything about we need next day to what's going on in Ramallah, example, in West Bank, in Jerusalem, even sometimes in Gaza. So we know everything that we need. And in Friday day, it's special because you need to prepare yourself to charge your cameras, to check everything around you, your helmet and your vest, to arrange the car to go and to cover this protest. It's really sometimes goes dangerous because occupation and soldiers need to distinguish between the protester even or a photographer. So you have to be careful. You have to put yourself in danger between time to time. And this is the strange thing that sometimes. Sometimes you get even after you take a picture, you just go back home. You should spread the pictures around. You should the right information about what is going on for the people who are watching for the first time. And also you sometimes get some stranger people from the other side of Israel or the people who don't like the Palestinians. So you have to answer their questions and to answer all of this, not to explain everything for them.
See. I understand. Do you feel that, how are you affected, for example, by the checkpoints or, when the Israeli army, seals off certain areas, are you still able to somehow get in and take photographs of what is going on? Because many times we know that's done so information doesn't get to the outside world about what's happening in Palestine.
Taking this as an example, if we say, for a talk about protest, most of the time the commanders came and asked us for the press IDs. So if you are not, sometimes they can arrest you if you don't have a press ID, or sometimes you should go from here. The simple reason he will say, you are in closed military zone, you should not be here. And if they shut you and you have a court against them or anything, they will say you were in a closed military zone, you should not be there. And even if checkpoints, sometimes when they check IDs, if you keep your press ID inside the normal Palestinian ID, they can take more time to check it. Sometimes they follow us in Facebook or this stuff, because when I started in 2009, I used to tweet I lost two of my Facebook accounts. I get reported from Israeli people. I lost my two accounts, and I have 3,000 pictures around from different protests. And I made another account. I lost the second account. So it's not easy, even in the internet, not also in the background,
Right. And resistance continues in the West Bank, especially in your town of Nilin, where there are, concerted attempts at land appropriation. How do you see the current situation on the ground? Has anything changed? Has anything changed for the better?
Yeah, let me say from 3 years to now, like, I used to go to cover protests, not only in my town in Alina, also Bilayin and Nabi Saleh town, Ramallah, like Kalandia, like over in front of the Ofer jail. Things changed, like, because in the beginning of the protest, you can find, like, a huge number of people attending these protests. And after a while, you can really notice that the number decreased because the occupation soldiers used many, many, like, tools and weapons and more power and violence against these people. Like, if I'm going to say, like, they use live ammunition. They use, like, sometimes snipers covered, like, snipers masks. Because you will not see his face, and even camera will not capture his, like, face details, because if you have a picture against a sniper, maybe they can use it, like, in a court, and this, like, an evidence against them, because they use a sniper, and this is the man, you know, all this stuff. So these are snipers, these, like, ammunition. Also, like, using his skunk water, it's so bad, and as I mentioned before, they didn't distinguish between a protester and also, like, people around. You use a huge amount of tear gas canisters, which, like, if you're going to protest near the houses, and they keep shooting. So, you know, the children, women, all people around, like, in these houses, they cannot handle this huge amount of tear gas. And it's really, after a period of time, you feel, like, pain in your, you know, in your bones. And this is what I feel like, you know. I get shot, like, also 3 times with rubber coat, steel bullets, and tear gas in my hands, and I still feel the pain, like, 50 years, like, every winter. I should, like, cover my hands because, you know, it's a nervous stuff. So this is what you use, and you use more and more, like, nitrating, arresting people, treating them, you know. And all this stuff is not easy, like, here and then, you know, around. Many people, like, if your kid, or, like, a young man attending a protest and your father is working inside Israel, what are they going to do with it? You're going to take the permission from your father, and you're going to stay, your father going to stay at home, and then you'll get the problems with your father because I told you don't go, blah, blah, I lost my job, and this is that thing. They use to make things harder for the people. If I'm going to go, let's say, more about the situation now in the ground. So I'm going to talk about Al-Aqsa and Jerusalem and the city invading Masjid Al-Aqsa. This is like making a new fire, making a new intifada, because they know that the Al-Quds and the Masjid Al-Aqsa means a lot to the Palestinian people. So it's a holy place for us. And what they are using to do, this is makes more things complicated. And when they back to talk about peace and you go underground to see, like, oh, settlements expanding, oh, be more people in jails, more people going in the, like, hunger strike. So the situation in the ground going more and more crazy. And the reason not from Palestinian people, it's from the Israeli side, which all the time closed all the doors for any peace operation, any peace negotiation. Even this is like goes, like, it's like, you know, the peace about the concept of peace going outside from our plans, because when we look to the other side, it's all the time blaming us for everything, and they kill people, arrest people, grab more land, and this is what's going on in the ground nowadays.
Recently, we've also seen a lot of violence on the part of the Palestinian Authority. I know I have seen photographs on your website concerning recent protests that happened in Ramallah. Can you speak to that a little bit? Like, what kind of tactics are used by the Palestinian security forces against Palestinians, like protesting the economy in the West Bank?
And also, you know, let's say part of what's going on even in the West Bank or the economy itself, it's Israel, because the money of taxes and the agreements, like Paris agreements, which connected the Palestinian economy with the Israeli one, and the condition in Israel is better than, like, the Palestinian one. I was one of the people who, like, photographed what's going on in Ramallah, like, when Mufaz arranged to visit President Mahmoud Abbas in Ramallah. Like, I was arrested also by the Palestinian Authority. That's one of the men was, like, a civilian. He came and tried to block my cameras and took me to the office. No one touched me, but, you know, and they took me to the office, like, for, like, to the... arrested me for, like, 30 minutes, And then after that, they left me after the protest came to the police office to get us outside. So what is going on the ground also, and like in the West Bank, it's the people like sick of everything. Like they tried negotiation for a long time. You know, people losing more lands, people losing more people. Like after the occupation arrest them, so they get, they're getting nothing, and they're now like upset from the economy. Conditions going on in the West Bank on the Palestinian authorities. So this is like, you can say like the Israeli like, have a part of this, and the Palestinian authorities have to change their like, you know, procedures or ideas or, you know, let's say, anything they are doing in the ground, because things are going outside of the bottle. You know, it's like a can and you're getting full, so the people will explode to every part and every side. So and the Palestinian authorities have to change a lot on the ground to make the situation stable.
Thank you. And one of the things that I like about your photographs, just to change the conversation a little bit, is that you don't always focus, you know, on the violence. Of course, the violence is there, and you want to, you know, create the images for that, show us the images for that. But I like that you have a lot of photographs about the that show the Palestinian countryside, that show the Palestinian people. Can you talk a little bit more about this side of your photographic work?
Yes, exactly. You know, and this is the good part about what I do also, because you have to breathe outside the tear gas, outside these guns and the political events. So you need like to recharge your soil, recharge your emotions. So I take photographs for everything. Let's say I live in a countryside, so it's giving me more help. And more healthy like conditions when I go outside with my brother also to take photos for nature or play with the sun. Yeah, and people can go to my Facebook page, I Am Palestine, or to my blog to see more photos like this. We go like outside sometimes to a kids' event, playing and take pictures for them. Like the most fun I have to take pictures for kids. And all this time I'm so familiar with them, even I don't know them, because all the time they try to make me like take pictures for them. And sometimes they ask for the pictures, sometimes I meet them again. I take pictures also for the Palestine, like, you know, tradition and stuff like Debka and dancing, to the old houses, to the old places in the cities or in the villages. Sometimes I arrange with my friends like photography towers around special places to document what's going on these places, to send pictures on the internet, so we can find many people outside the house and who cannot get inside. They say, oh, this is my land, or this is my family, my father, my grandfather lived here. So people like it's hungry for more and more from the daily life of Palestine, hungry for the land, hungry for everything that expressed themselves. And a good point is for people who are listening to me to go to YouTube and write I Am Palestine documentary film. It's a 16 minutes. One of my friends make a documentary film. It express the two sides, the political side when I cover like a protest, and the daily life side when I take pictures in these all the places with the kids, so they can see more and more and look what is going on really exactly the daily life in Palestine. So the nature and the people in Palestine, this is the new the second side of my photography, which give us the power to take and show the people around that also we also are people, humans, and we need to live. We have a kids, a smile, and they should live like others, other children all around the world. We have like a normal life when we want to live, and despite the hard life, we can smile despite of our tears and you know, in our cheeks.
Thank you. And as we come to the end of our interview today, what would you like our listeners to know about you, about your photographic work, or about Palestine that can change the situation?
If I want to say about Ahmed, as like a person, I feel like I'm so human person, so single. Despite I know many people all around the world, like I guess like getting famous, it's hard to get the connection with all the people that send you the emails. Sometimes they need a picture to use it to support Palestine. Sometimes they need to thank you for what you are doing. I want to say, like, be patient with me, because I have a lot to do, a lot to express to the people. I have to answer everyone. I'm single person. I need really to get in touch with many people and more to express myself in the photos I take. I want to also have a connection with other photographers all around the world. It's not only in Palestine. I need to be connected to all the photographers around the world. So you need to learn from their experience. Not only photographers, also artists, writers, singers. A camera is like a tool to express yourself, like the musician when he uses like an instrument to play music to express like a sadness or happiness or something, a national to support like a case. And the same, the photographer, the same thing. This is what about Ahmed, about Palestine. I need like for the people who can come here and visit. Keep away from reading many news around about Palestine. If you have an application and you can just go inside, have a visit here, you will know everything. And by yourself, you will see everything going on the ground. And this is what the Israeli government tried many times to keep from getting inside or deport them outside. So because they know when the people come here, they know everything going here, and they're going to go outside and affect many people. And this is my message. My message from the people around Palestine, inside of Palestine, you should know that there is Palestinian prisoners who are in hunger strike for tens of days. There's like a land grabbing. There's a people like all the time getting problem from the occupation for nothing, get arrested. And, you know, we have like a lot of things to talk about. You know, minutes cannot express. This is a case from tens of years. So I advise all the people to come here to Palestine to see, and the rest for them. And thank you so much for allowing me to speak and to express what's going on in Palestine and to express what's going on myself.
Thank you very much for joining us, Ahmed. We wish you continued success and stay in touch. And we encourage our listeners to also visit your website. As a reminder, it's www.ionpalestine.com. Shukran.
Thank you so much. Afon.
And we turn now to a topic and an event coming up that's very important for us here in the Boston area in terms of changing U.S. policy in the Middle East and specifically in Israel and Palestine. And I have joining me today Susan Nicholson and Marty Fetterman that are involved with the Expose AIPAC initiative. And I'd like to start our conversation today by asking you like how this came about, how it was decided to have this series of events coming up next week.
Well, I can relate this to personal experience. In 2011, I witnessed firsthand the power of AIPAC in lobbying Congress. And just to back up for a moment, AIPAC, I probably don't have to explain to your listeners, stands for American-Israel Public Affairs Committee. I'm always amazed when I tell people that I'm involved in an anti-AIPAC conference, that people who are otherwise very well informed politically ask, well, what's AIPAC? And after explaining what the letters stand for, I say, you really have to know about AIPAC because it's what largely determines U.S. policy on the Middle East. So to get back to 2011, I was in Washington, D.C. in the spring with Churches for Middle East Peace. And at the same time, AIPAC was holding its annual policy conference. And at the same time, Code Pink was holding what was called Move Over AIPAC. So when I went to a lobby day with Churches for Middle East Peace, and there were probably 150 other people for Middle East Peace there, we went to congressional meetings, I saw thousands of AIPAC activists, all with their badges representing AIPAC, lobbying on that same day. And I later learned that that conference had had 10,000 participants. The AIPAC conference had had 10,000 participants, and they had scheduled 500 meetings with congressional leaders and their aides. And what were they lobbying for? They were lobbying for a resolution which would block Palestinian statehood. And they lobbied very, very successfully for it. That resolution urged the president to lead a worldwide campaign to stop other countries from recognizing Palestine at the UN, called upon the president to veto Palestinian statehood if it came up at the Security Council, and warned Palestinians that if they pursued statehood at the UN, they would lose U.S. funding. So from my perspective, it was a very bad turn in foreign policy, very bad to have the United States adopt it. But it passed. As a tribute to AIPAC's tremendous success in lobbying, it passed the House by 407-6, and it passed the Senate by unanimous consent. So I was very pleased to see another organization, Code Pink, and other co-sponsoring organizations there trying to counter the power of AIPAC. And other people who were at that conference suggested that we try to do something similar in Boston, have an anti-AIPAC conference. Well, the conference that we're holding in Boston is not timed to coincide with the annual policy conference because that's already happened, and there was another counter-demonstration which was called Occupy AIPAC. Our conference is timed to coincide with AIPAC's annual national summit, which it describes on its website as an elite foreign policy retreat, only exclusively for high-dollar donors. It's limited to people who have donated at least $3,600 annually to AIPAC, and a special dinner for those who have donated more than $10,000. So you know right away that people who are going to be gathered there are people who can open their pockets not only for AIPAC, but also for Congress people who follow AIPAC's agenda. So that's part of one of our themes is money. Money, war, and Islamophobia are the three themes to our Expose AIPAC conference.
Do we know which of our local representatives or politicians may be attending this summit? Do we have any idea?
Well, I just got the list yesterday. I ran it off, and I'm sorry I didn't bring it with me, but I recognize two names. Mm. One was Deval Patrick, and the other was Scott Brown.
Okay.
I imagine Deval Patrick will be there welcoming AIPAC to the city of Boston, mm-hmm. where we propose a unwelcome AIPAC. And Scott Brown, of course, will be there for obvious reasons. I'm glad to see that his opponent, Elizabeth Warren, was not present.
Okay, but that's good to know for people with the upcoming elections. And I think Deval is running again as well at some point. And I know he has also been to Israel, I think, in the last year. So it's interesting to know who is standing with AIPAC. What kind of activities are you planning during the national summit, and how can people get involved?
All right. Well, there are 3 days, just like the summit is 3 days. Our conference is 3 days, and I'll talk about the first day, and Marty will talk about the other 2 days, and then we'll mention a way that people can get involved right this week, even before it begins. So the first day we consider sort of a teach-in, or it's called actually a People's Forum, and it will take place at the Palestine Cultural Center for Peace, 41 Quint Avenue in Alston, starting at 3:45, ending after dinner, which will be served at the Palestine Center. And we have four really great speakers lined up for that. The first speaker is our state representative, Massachusetts state representative from the Somerville area, Denise Provo. And she will talk firsthand about the experience of being lobbied by AIPAC representatives and representatives of the larger Israel lobby, of which AIPAC is a focal point, to authorize divestment of state pension funds from Iran, which she thought was not in the best interests of the state of Massachusetts. Then we'll have Stephen Walt, who probably doesn't need any introduction here, opening up the whole discussion of the Israel lobby. We will have Jamal Abdi from the National Iranian American Council, and he is the foreign policy director for NIAC. It should be National Iranian American Council. Yes, I did say it correctly. And he was going to track for us how AIPAC is pushing the U.S. closer and closer to war on Iran. And then finally, we will have Kristen Shremsky from American Muslims for Palestine, and she will talk about the connections between AIPAC, the Israel lobby, and Islamophobia.
Full roster there.
Yeah.
While Saturday People's Forum will be focusing on educating people as to what the Israel lobby is doing and what its effect and implications for us here are. The activities on Sunday and Monday, both days, which begin at noon down at the Boston Seaport Hotel, which is where the AIPAC summit is being held. And the purpose of those 2 days is to bring attention to what's going on inside the hotel. And we will have a variety of activities, demonstrations, street theater, music, speakers. And the best way to find out what's happening when is to go to the Expose AIPAC website, which is www.exposeapac.org. And you can follow us on Twitter. You can go to Expose AIPAC on Facebook. And as things are happening and things are being planned, you'll get all of the information about where to be. And we're hoping that these activities will draw attention. We're doing a lot of PR with the media to hopefully get the kind of attention that, unfortunately, the other side doesn't get, because we can't pay for the kinds of things that AIPAC and the other parts of the Israel lobby are able to do. So we want to do it by people power instead of money. So I'm urging people to go to the website and to see what we're doing, and there will be opportunities that you can find out about there during the week to prepare for that, to make props and materials that we'll be using during the demonstrations those 2 days.
I would just add about the prop making that people are invited to come this Tuesday, isn't it, Marty?
Yes.
Tuesday at 6 o'clock at the Palestine Cultural Center for a prop making and pizza party. It should be lots of fun, and I hope we have lots of turnout for that.
I encourage our listeners to actually go to that and bring their friends and their family. I notice when I take a look at the events here that on Monday you plan to have a get out of our town party. Can you explain a little bit more about that?
Yeah, it's a handle to get a it's a way to get a handle on what we're trying to say. Susan mentioned that she's sure that Deval Patrick will welcome these people to Boston. And it's important for us to get the message out that there are a lot of us here that don't welcome AIPAC here, and that has to get out to the public. Again, we will have singing and speakers and a variety of activities going on, but the message is that we don't simply accept that the agenda that AIPAC is putting forth is in fact the agenda that most Americans have, that the branding that AIPAC is doing covers up the fact that this has tremendous consequences on our life if we are in fact pushed to follow Israel into a war in Iran. It's going to be devastating, and that's going to include Americans on the ground, inevitably. It's going to add more to the kinds of money. We're giving Israel $3 billion a year. However you feel about helping the people of Israel, we're at a time when we're being crunched monetarily here and told that funds are going to be pulled back from the average citizen here in Boston, but we're giving primarily military aid to pay for the things that Israel is doing and that AIPAC is supporting. And that's primarily what we want people to understand. And not that it's going to, realistically, we're not naive, going to make a huge difference, but at least to send the message to the people inside the hotel that don't get too comfortable that you think, the AIPAC puts forth this message that it's a public affairs committee to support the shared values of the Israeli and American people. And the reality is that's not what it does. It's there to lobby for Israel. And we don't share, the average American doesn't share the values that Israel is expressing right now and that AIPAC is pushing.
Could I just jump in there for a moment to follow up on what Marty says, that AIPAC is not expressing what most people want in this country? I've seen a recent poll that I think it's something like 70% of Americans are opposed to an attack on Iran. And yet, one of the centerpieces of the AIPAC lobbying this year in its Washington conference was a joint resolution on Iran, which would bring us all that much closer to an attack. And it passed in the House by 401 to 11. Only 11 representatives voted against it. And it passed in the Senate 90 to 1. The sole dissenting vote in the Senate said, a vote for this resolution is a vote for the concept of preemptive war. After those two resolutions passed, AIPAC issued a press release congratulating, applauding Congress for its action. And Marty mentioned aid to Israel. Another centerpiece of lobbying this year was what's called an enhanced U.S.-Israel Enhanced Security Cooperation Act. It adds to the $3.1 billion that we are already scheduled to give to Israel this year. And it also added a statement that the U.S. will use its veto in the Security Council to veto any anti-Israel resolution, which, of course, would explain its veto of the resolution last year, which said settlements are illegal and an obstacle to peace. That happens to be the administration's policy, but we vetoed our own policy and were congratulated for that by AIPAC.
Unfortunately, the drums of war are beating pretty quickly.
Yes.
And considering how organized AIPAC is, and when you explain like the difference between even the efforts of Code Pink at that time to counter AIPAC, like the numbers like are astounding.
Oh, yes.
How many number of meetings, how many people they actually to see and convince.
Right. And well, Israel ranks as the number two lobby in the United States in terms of power. That's from a Fortune magazine study in 1997. Since then, it's consistently ranked in the top five most powerful lobbies in Congress.
When you look at what they do, I was just going to say, when you look at what they do, you wonder, of course, they're there to promote Israel, but they're also there to promote a certain version of Israel. Mm-hmm. So ultimately, you know, going to war with Iran or continuing the situation as it is in Palestine, I don't think that it serves either the American people or even the Israeli people or the American people.
If I can say something about that, there's a tremendous irony in what AIPAC is trying to do relative, for instance, to Iran. The overwhelming opinion of the military and security leaders, past and present, in Israel are saying that an attack on Iran would be disastrous, would inevitably mean a long, extended ground war, and are pushing tremendously not to do something like that. And pretty much the only people that are continuing to push for a war with Iran are Benjamin Netanyahu, Avigdor Lieberman, and AIPAC. Mm-hmm. And AIPAC is having a tremendous success in pushing and especially utilizing and manipulating the election time. It's just, and unfortunately, we don't have the time to go into the mechanizations of what's going on to push our leaders to absurd kinds of positions that Israelis, and I'm not talking about the person on the street, Israeli leaders are saying would be disastrous for Israelis. So it's you know, what can you say?
And I thought that that was actually an interesting part of what's coming out in terms of news. But I don't know how well known it's known in the United States that a lot of military personnel in Israel are saying, well, guys, you know, this is not quite a great idea, but it seems like the politicians are gung-ho on this conflagration with Iran. So it's an interesting dichotomy. And I think on the part of the Israeli military, I mean, they know what the consequences of that are, and they've, you know, done their estimations, and even they can't seem to pull their politicians back. What I'd like to do as we come into the last 5 minutes of our conversation here is, I know that this is a series of three events, you know, to highlight what's going on with AIPAC, the power of AIPAC, and to counter that. How does this action build, you know, towards further action, you know, to counter and change U.S. policy? Is it part of, is it one element of other actions?
Yeah, if people go to the website, you'll see the huge number of organizations that are co-sponsoring these events. And one of the challenges always is to do what seem to be incredibly successful events that don't lead anywhere. And our hope is, and our intention is, to follow this up in a variety of ways, and the various groups that are involved to do it in their particular ways with their particular constituencies, so that this doesn't just get to be, we hate the guys that are in the hotel, you know, eating big, great meals, but that there are things that this points to that we need to put into the political system and into the general American awareness. And, you know, again, there's been more in the last weeks, even the last couple of months, about this issue of Israelis that are not supporting Netanyahu's agenda. But again, AIPAC and its own organizations and a whole network of organizations have a virtually unlimited amount of resources, people and money, to get the word out. And the media has been putting some of it out, but very little relative to the other message. And so it's really important for us to push what happens afterwards. And I'll add to that, I don't know if people are aware of these horrible racist ads that have been going up in various cities. And what is wonderful right now is the reaction to that has been amazing. And people haven't, the people who have put these ads up have been taken into court in some places because they've tried to stop other advertising. There are groups all over the country that are sending out the word that we don't accept Islamophobia. And AIPAC et al. Can say what they want, but we're not going to let that stand anymore. So hopefully this is starting a trend that we'll be able to follow up.
No, I've seen that. I've seen a woman was arrested in I think it was New York for defacing one of those ads, changing the message. Susan, do you have anything else that you'd like to say as we come to the end of our show?
Yes,
here?
Just I hope that every person who comes will bring with them someone who has said, "What's AIPAC?"
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Excellent. And we encourage people, again, to go to the Expose AIPAC website, to keep up with events. And we've come to the end of another edition of This Week in Palestine, a 45-minute segment that's part of Truth and Justice Radio from 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. on WZBC 90.3 FM Newton. And we hope you join us again next week for news and views about Palestine. But before we go, I'd like to remind people that the Boston Palestine Film Festival is still ongoing. There are films scheduled for today, so we do encourage you to attend and support. And also, the Russell Tribunal on Palestine began yesterday, and you can also, if you Google it, watch some segments of that live, even though you cannot be in New York. And we thank you again for joining us, and we hope to hear and have you with us again next week. Thank you.